Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. We have got a great show lined up for you today. We'll open with Leon Thompson telling you the inspiring story behind the African immigrant in San Diego who won the Boston Marathon. We'll have an interview with organizers and a young musician gearing up for this Saturday's Coyote Music Festival at Cuyamaca College. You'll hear details on the jury verdict in the murder trial of Kasim Alhamidi in El Cajon, and you'll hear about a promising new medication on the horizon to treat muscular dystrophy. You'll learn where your tax dollars are going, and the answers just might surprise you. We'll have some water-saving tips and a warning for cat owners. Hear about a consumer victory over a multinational food corporation. Plus, if you've ever had a hankering to take up agriculture, learn about a new FDA program for aspiring new farmers. Plus, you'll hear all about Lakeside's Rodeo and Western Days, and Arielle Brook will preview other events coming up this weekend on Destination East County. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Meb Keflezighi is a champion in every sense of the word, an impoverished refugee who has become a symbol of the American success story. Already famous as an Olympic medalist who has overcome great adversity, the San Diego athlete on Monday won the Boston Marathon. As a child, he came to America as a refugee with his family, fleeing war-torn Eritrea in Africa. The son of a janitor and one of 10 children, Keflezighi found that running became his ticket out of poverty. He began running while at Roosevelt Middle School and won the CIF State Championship representing San Diego High School. He went on to win four NCAA championships and All-American awards at UCLA before winning a silver medal at the 2004 Summer Olympics. But in 2007, tragedy struck. While running in the 2008 U.S. Olympic Marathon trials in New York's Central Park, he broke his hip. He pushed himself to crawl across the finish line, finishing eighth, but failed to qualify for the Olympic team. During the race, his friend and training partner died of a heart attack. Despite pain and grief, Keflezighi triumphed over adversity, winning the New York Marathon the next year in 2009. His amazing story is chronicled in his autobiography published in 2010 titled Run to Overcome, the inspiring story of an American champion's long-distance quest to achieve a big dream. Keflezighi has previously run twice in the Boston Marathon, but by a stroke of fate, he missed last year's race due to an injury. Two bombs placed near the finish line killed three people and wounded 260 more. This year, Keflezighi completed a lifelong dream, winning the 26.2-mile Boston Marathon at age 39 with a time of 2 hours, 8 minutes, and 37 seconds, the first American man to win the famed race in over three decades. During the race, he wore the names of those killed in last year's bombing on his runner's bib, along with the name of a slain policeman. As he crossed the finish line, he waved and pumped his fist at the crowd, chanting, USA, USA. This is probably the most meaningful victory for an American because of what happened last year, he said, the New York Times reported. Now a U.S. citizen with three children of his own, Keflezighi reflected that all athletes have dreams. And now his career is fulfilled. He concluded, today was the day when dreams and reality met. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. My very special guests today are from Cuyamaca College, and they are here to tell you all about something to howl about, a very special event coming up, the Coyote Music Fest. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Let's start with Taylor Smith. Taylor is the chair of the Performing Arts Department at Cuyamaca College. Taylor, tell us about the festival.
The festival is on Saturday, April 26th. noon to 4 at the college campus on our lawn. And basically this festival features 7 local artists, all of them hand-picked by students in our music program.
So it's by audition process.
Correct, yeah. We hold auditions, we held them back in February, and the students in this particular class listened to the auditions and then chose the artists they wanted to invite to play at the show.
Very good. And it's a wide variety of musical styles and artists, I understand, through the years that you've had there?
Yeah, this is our 6th time around. And over these 5 and now 6 years, we've had a pretty large variety. We've had hip-hop bands, R&B groups, singer-songwriters. This time it's a little bit more narrow. It's basically just about 4 rock bands mm-hmm. and 3 singer-songwriter folk artists.
And some blues also.
Yeah, and some blues, some kind of hard rock blues stuff in there.
Right. And it's not just the students from the college that perform, correct? The auditions are open to everybody?
Right. Auditions are actually open to anybody. In fact, this time around, there's only 1 student from the program in the roster. Everyone else is from outside of the college.
Wow. So there's a lot of talent there. I've been to the festival before and really enjoyed. It's amazing the caliber of the music that you can hear there. Now, we've also got Leon Thompson here today, and Leon's son is a professional musician, so he understands the importance of a band learning how to promote itself. But Leon, I'm going to have you introduce our next guest.
I'd like to introduce Annie Zuckerman, who teaches marketing for the music industry seminar class.
We team teach. Taylor teaches the sound engineering side, the logistics, and the graphics team.
Uh-huh.
And I'm in charge of the marketing team. And so what I do is I get the students together, and we try to promote the festival via Facebook page. And our Facebook site is www.facebook.com/coyotemusicfest.com. And we also have our own dedicated website, www.coyotemusicfest.com. But the students get together and they try to promote the site. They're assigned an artist so that they can be a liaison to be able to get information from them as far as a biography and any background information that we can use to promote them on the website. And we're also responsible for trying to find food trucks in order for them to be vendors at the site, as well as other types of vendors.
So the students put on the entire festival?
Yeah, they're responsible for all of the work done, all of the marketing, the promotion, the publicity. They actually design the posters, too. So they're responsible for the poster that we have this year. It's a little more retro. It's more like a 60s-style, psychedelic type of poster. But that was their choice. They really wanted something with that theme.
So with the music industry seminar class, you actually get into all of the skills that you're going to need in some degree if you're going to be a professional musician or artist.
Yeah, we try to get them to select the type of the team that they'd want to be involved in, whether it's the sound team, the marketing team, or the graphics team based on their skill sets, or they don't have to have that skill set. They have to have the enthusiasm to want to be a part of that. From there, they use those skill sets to promote the festival and work with the festival. We want them to have hands-on experience with every aspect of producing a festival so that they can put that on a resume and say they've actually done that. But all of their efforts are culminated with the event.
That sounds fantastic. Now we have one of the lucky musicians with us who was chosen to perform in this year's Coyote Music Festival, Gonzalo Meza.
Hi.
Welcome, Gonzalo. So tell me about your band. It's called Flower Animals. How did you come up with the name?
Yes, I came up with the name grabbing it from a band from the 60s called The Animals. They made House of the Rising Sun famous, and they're one of my mm-hmm. biggest musical influences. And the flower I got from Talking Head song called Nothing But Flowers that's really close to me.
Now, some of your songs have some social justice themes, I understand.
Yes.
Can you give us an example?
Like my song PTSD off of my first album, Mex Americana.
PTSD?
Yes.
Post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Yes. It's influenced by an NPR article I read about a recent Afghan veteran that came back to Camp Pendleton and took his life 2 months after, just because he couldn't recognize the symptoms of PTSD, and his family didn't either.
Wow. Yeah, music really has such power to convey stories like that and issues, sometimes in a very emotional way that simply reading a news article about it doesn't convey, don't you think?
Yes.
So what style of music do you do?
I would call it somewhere in between blues and garage rock.
How has being chosen to perform at the Coyote Music Festival helped your band or your career?
It's helped us by getting a bigger audience, by being exposed, like playing a festival, meeting other musicians, networking.
I understand that you're back to using some of the old-fashioned technologies for getting your music out there. Tell us about that.
Yes, we used cassette tapes to release our first album called Mex Americana. We had a cassette release show on January 3rd at Jim Standard on Home Boulevard, and it's still being sold today there. And inside, if you don't have a cassette tape player, inside there is a code where you can go into my website, gonzalomeza.bandcamp.com, and download the full album for free.
Wow. And that's your website is spelled GONZALOMEZA.
.bandcamp.com.
So gonzalomeza.bandcamp.com.
Yes.
Once again, folks, the music festival is the Coyote Music Festival. It's this Saturday, April 26th from noon to 4 on the beautiful lawn at Cuyamaca College. And Taylor, where can people go to get more information?
Well, we have a couple of websites they could visit. The festival's website is coyotemusicfest.com. They can also visit the college at cuyamaca.edu. And the performing arts department specifically would be cuyamaca.edu/performing arts, where there would be a little bit more detail about other events as well.
So, Taylor, what's the lineup like this year?
The lineup this year, we have 7 artists total. First one actually is Flower Animals. Gonzalo is here with them. We heard a little bit about them. But then we have an artist that goes by the name of Native. It's actually just a solo piano player, and he sings. And he is a local high school grad who is now attends UCLA. He's coming back. And then we have another group called Rabbit Fever. That's a kind of power trio blues group. And the drummer in that group actually is a graduate of our program. Then we have Rayleigh Nicole, who is a repeat from last year.
We've interviewed on our show. Beautiful.
Awesome. Yes, she's great. We have an artist who goes by the name of Digital Lizards of Doom, which is a wonderful name. Yeah, D-L-O-D. And he makes electronic music.
Uh-huh.
He's a solo artist, makes electronic music, but then also plays guitar and sings on top of his electronic looping and such.
Can't miss that.
Yeah. We have a group called Mockingbird, which is a family, actually. It's a mother, father, and son trio. And they make kind of Americana folk-type music. And then our last group is Boondock Brothers, who is also a repeat from last year. They played at our show in the previous year. And they were, I think they played last year as well. And they are similar to Rabbit Fever in that they're a trio that plays kind of hard rock, blues.
Very good. That sounds like a fabulous lineup. We're going to play a sample or two here of some music, starting with a song of Gonzalo's. Gonzalo, which song are you going to have us hear?
PTSD. Thank you.
All right. That was the Flower Animals playing PTSD, just one of the many bands you can hear this weekend at the Cuyamaca College Coyote Music Festival. So once again, I want to thank all of you for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, and we'll see you all this weekend at the Coyote Music Festival at Cuyamaca College. We have a big owl of appreciation.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
After a day and a half of deliberations, an El Cajon jury on Thursday found Iraqi immigrant Kasim Alhamidi guilty of first-degree murder in the death of his wife, Shaima Alawadi. After the verdict was read, Alhamidi prayed and spoke in Arabic, professing, "I attest to God that I am not the killer. I am innocent." Family members showed outbursts of emotion, divided in their reactions after the verdict. The couple's oldest son, Mohammed, rose and shouted profanities, exclaiming, "My dad is innocent. He was tried unfairly," before being restrained and escorted out of the courtroom. But Mohammed's brother, Ali, reportedly said he supports the verdict. The victim's mother told the press that she believes Alhamidi is guilty and deserves worse than the 26 years to life in prison sentence he now faces. Police initially investigated the killing as a hate crime before turning their focus on Alhamidi. A threatening note was found at the family's El Cajon home prior to the killing. It read, "This is my country. Go back to yours, you terrorist." A copy of that note was left beside the victim, who was found mortally wounded in her home on March 21, 2012. Alawadi wanted a divorce and reportedly told family members she couldn't stand her husband. The prosecution argued that her husband struck her at least 6 times in the head with a heavy object, most likely a tire iron. But no blood or forensic evidence was presented. There was no history of family violence presented in court, and no eyewitness who could identify Alhamidi. His wife died several days later in a hospital without regaining consciousness. Alhamidi reportedly asked relatives what would happen if she were to awaken and accuse him of hitting her. But he also reportedly asked doctors if they could transplant his brain to save her. When she was taken off life support, he asked for forgiveness, though the defense attorney said that is customary in his religion. Alhamidi told police he was out driving when his wife was killed. A video reportedly showed a van that appeared to be his near the home around the time of the murder, with a person in dark clothing coming and going. After police altered a photo and date stamp to make it appear they had proof that his vehicle was parked there near the time of the murder, he reportedly admitted this could be true. His lawyer argued that Alhamidi may have been confused about the timing due to the recent time change from daylight savings time. The couple's daughter, Fatima, 17, told police on the day of the murder that she saw a white guy running away. Fatima was at home when her mother was killed and said she heard a squeal followed by breaking glass. She gave conflicting information on whether she was asleep or in the shower. She was shown a lineup but did not identify the person she earlier said was fleeing the scene. Fatima had her own troubles with her mother and her father. The teenager had run away from home repeatedly and once jumped out of a moving car to escape her mother. She admitted that her parents were upset that she was resisting an arranged marriage with a Muslim man, and that they disapproved of her romantic involvement with a Chaldean Christian man. Alhamidi traveled to Iraq after the murder for his wife's burial. Despite an offer of safe haven, he returned to the United States. In November 2012, police received a call from Fatima, who told them he did it. Her father was arrested 7 months after Shaima Alawadi's brutal murder. Kasim Alhamidi is scheduled for sentencing on May 15th in the El Cajon Courthouse.
The Beginning Farmer and Rancher Development Program, or BFRDP, will help a new generation get into agriculture. With $100 million from the new Farm Bill, the U.S. Department of Agriculture will help train and educate new farmers and ranchers.
Average age of our farmers is 58 years old. And so we need the bench. We need to get folks coming into agriculture who either grew up on a farm and are thinking about coming back, but also folks who don't know much about agriculture but have that drive, that passion, who want to get into farming or ranching.
And part of BFRDP's funding will help limited resource and socially disadvantaged beginning farmers and ranchers and military veterans get started.
We're targeting these groups of folks to give them the very special tools they may need, the uniqueness of their questions or concerns that they may have in getting into agriculture. So it's really a target of funds to these areas.
For more information, go to nifa.usda.gov. In Washington, D.C., for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, I'm Bob Ellison.
The deadline for paying your federal income taxes on April 15th is now past. But do you know where your tax dollars are going? You might be surprised to find out just what the federal government is prioritizing and what it's not. Nearly half of the federal government's revenues come from income taxes. According to the National Priorities Project, the average American paid over $11,000 in federal income taxes last year. Over a quarter of that, 27%, went to fund the military. Healthcare programs, including Medicaid and the Children's Health Insurance Program, got almost 23% of your tax dollars. 14% went to pay interest on the national debt. Unemployment benefits and labor accounted for about 10 cents on every tax dollar that you paid. Veterans benefits account for 5%, as does food and agriculture. Running the government itself takes 4.5 cents of every tax dollar that you pay. Housing and community expenditures take 4 cents. Only about 2% of your taxes goes for the education of our nation's children. Energy and the environment takes just under 2% of taxes. Transportation, science, and international affairs each got between a penny and 2 pennies out of every tax dollar that you pay. Now, these figures do not include Medicare or Social Security, which we pay for through sources other than income taxes, such as payroll taxes. As we stated before, income taxes provide nearly half of all revenues for the federal government. If we add in revenues from these other sources, where does all of that money in the federal budget go? Overall, about a third of it is used to fund Social Security, unemployment, and labor. Medicare and health consume nearly 27% of the budget. The military gets almost 17%, and about 6% of the total budget goes to pay interest on the national debt, while 4% funds veterans' benefits. About 3% is for agriculture and food programs. Education, housing, and transportation take about 2% each. Energy and the environment, science, and foreign aid each account for 1% or less of the federal budget. Oh, and the smallest category of all? For all the talk of a bloated federal bureaucracy that we hear about, the government itself takes less than 0.1%, or about 0.01% of the total federal budget. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
It's not often that a multinational corporation backs down from a strategy to save money. But consumers have scored a win, persuading food giant General Mills to drop a controversial policy that had sparked outrage among customers and a wave of negative publicity. Many consumers were shocked to discover that they had given up their right to sue the company unwittingly, simply by liking General Mills on Facebook, downloading coupons for products such as cereals or canned goods, or subscribing to the company's newsletter online. All disputes would instead have to be settled by arbitration, even if a customer was seriously injured or killed by a product. Faced by a barrage of complaints, the company backed down and announced it has dropped the new legal terms. "We're sorry we even started down that road," an announcement from General Mills stated. The company apologized for its actions and said it hopes consumers will continue to download General Mills coupons, visit the company's website and social media sites. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
If you received an Easter lily as a gift, be aware that while the blooms are beautiful, they are deadly for cats. The FDA warns that the entire lily plant, leaf, pollen, and flower is poisonous to cats. Even if they eat just a couple of leaves or lick a few pollen grains off of their fur, cats can suffer acute kidney failure within a very short period of time. If you believe your cat has ingested even a small part of a lily, you should seek emergency veterinary treatment immediately. While dogs are less sensitive to lilies than cats, lilies can also cause toxicity in dogs. So if you have pets, it's wise to avoid planting lilies or having them in your home. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
April showers bring May flowers, as the saying goes. But so far, this April has brought very little rainfall, so the county is asking your help to conserve water. Our normal rainy season is nearing its end, and rainfall amounts remain only about half of a normal season statewide. The National Weather Service shows all of California remains in a drought, and the U.S. Drought Monitor lists San Diego in extreme drought condition. San Diego is down 13 inches in rainfall since January of 2011, more than one full season of precipitation lost, says the National Weather Service. Yet drought conditions are even worse in Riverside and Orange counties, which are down 2 feet below normal for the last 3 years. So even though San Diego has diversified its water sources, we can't afford to be complacent. It's important to take action now to conserve water, says Holly Crawford, director of the County Office of Emergency Services. Each of us can make a difference. In response to the severe drought across the state and a level one drought watch issued in San Diego County, residents are being encouraged to voluntarily decrease our water usage. The San Diego County Water Authority does not expect water shortage supplies in the region this year, but it is asking residents to voluntarily cut back on water use to maintain our water storage levels for the future. Residents are encouraged to take advantage of seminars and programs to help you be water wise at home or in your business. You can find links to some of these at the County News Center. Now, here are some simple tips to conserve water at home or at your business and also save money on your water bill. Fix leaky faucets and toilets. Install aerators with flow restrictors on kitchen and bathroom faucets. Take shorter showers. Don't leave the water running when you're rinsing dishes. Run the dishwasher and the clothes washer only when they have full loads. Turn off the water when brushing your teeth. Consider replacing older, high water volume toilets and washing machines with more efficient models. Water your landscaping before 10 o'clock in the morning and after 6 p.m. in the evening to reduce evaporation. Don't overwater landscaping. Avoid using a hose to wash off pavement when a broom can be used instead. Adjust automatic sprinklers to avoid overspraying. Fix broken and leaky sprinkler nozzles. Consider a water-smart landscaping, or better yet, landscape that's fire-resistant, too. Add mulch around trees and plants to reduce evaporation. You can find more water conservation tips, tools, and resources at watersmartsd.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Ed Barrena with a medical report. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, is on the verge of approving the first ever drug treatment for a severe form of muscular dystrophy. Duchenne muscular dystrophy is a deadly disease that typically leaves its victims in wheelchairs by their teens and dead in their 20s, according to the U.S. Human Genome Institute. This disease strikes one in every 3,500 boys worldwide. There has never been a cure or an effective treatment to slow down the progression of the disease, only treating symptoms such as trouble breathing. But now a new drug called eteplirsen, made by Sarepta Therapeutics, has shown dramatic results in a clinical trial. The test was small, with only 12 boys, yet all 12 had muscle deterioration virtually halted after taking the drug. Most striking is the case of two brothers. One is running and playing after participating in the clinical trial. His brother, who did not, is in a wheelchair and having trouble feeding himself. Despite these dramatic results and a lack of side effects, the FDA has been reluctant thus far to approve the drug without more testing and information. A separate trial that used a similar technology, though somewhat different treatment, failed, the Washington Post reports. But patients' families say waiting could cost them their children's lives, so they have been lobbying in Washington and filed a White House petition asking that the drug be approved, also posting online videos of boys benefiting from the drug. Duchenne muscular dystrophy is a mutation in a gene that produces dystrophin, a protein essential for muscle function. The drug works by bypassing the mutation and restoring the gene's ability to produce dystrophin. This can transform Duchenne into a much milder form of muscular dystrophy called Becker. Jerry Mendel, a pediatric expert at Nationwide Children's Hospital in Ohio, was the lead investigator on the clinical trial. He calls the results unequivocal, adding, "Since the day the kids were started on the drug, they basically have never changed again. I see it as a game changer." Only about 13% of Duchenne patients have the gene mutation that would allow them to benefit from the drug. But Sarepta is developing medications to treat other gene mutations for muscular dystrophy patients. The FDA has now asked for a larger clinical trial with up to 100 patients involving a wider range of ages in hopes of confirming the promising results and verifying the drug's safety. The treatment is not a cure, since it halts the progression of the disease, but it does not reverse it. So time is of the essence for families with children stricken by Duchenne muscular dystrophy. Even if approved, however, the new drug could be among the most expensive ever to come to market, according to the Washington Post, raising questions over just how accessible the treatment would be for families with limited financial means.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today we are on the road in Lakeside. We are here to tell you all about the 50th anniversary of the Lakeside Rodeo. And my special guest today is Betty Washburn, who is the media coordinator for the Lakeside Rodeo. Welcome to the show, Betty.
Thank you very much.
Now, tell us about the history of rodeos. For listeners who may not be familiar with the sport, how did it all get started?
Well, the sport of rodeo wasn't a sport. It was actual gentlemen on their ranches and stuff rounding up their cattle and branding them, and it went from there. They had to break horses, so saddle bronc riding started and bareback riding started that way. It was part of the ranching culture that you had to do these things, and then it came about that, Oh, this would be fun if we competed doing that. So they went into, on ranches and stuff, all the hands would get together and kind of compete doing that.
Yeah, it goes back to the vaquero days.
It goes back, well, Midwestern, and then the vaqueros also out here in the West. But it was part of ranching. It was what you did, and they thought it would be fun to get together and compete doing that, and then it just kind of grew from there, ranch against ranch, and then it got bigger and bigger, county against county. So rodeo actually came out of ranching.
Right. Now, tell us about the Lakeside Rodeo, how and when this one got started, which today is run by the El Capitan Stadium Association.
Yes. The El Capitan Stadium Association was actually formed by a group of parents, teachers, and administrators up at the El Capitan High School, and they wanted to build a football field. So the parents and everyone got together, and they needed to raise money. They didn't have money to do that. And the school district had just built another high school, so they didn't have a lot of money to do that. So a gentleman came forward and said, maybe we could put on a rodeo. Lakeside has had rodeos before. They've been fairly successful. Maybe we could do that. So they rented some ground. They rented some arena fixtures, some bleachers, and rodeo chutes and stuff, and put on their first rodeo in 1964. And it was successful. So they did it again in 1965, and then it grew from there. And then in 1969, a very generous lady happened to have this piece of property that we're sitting on now, and she donated it to the El Capitan Stadium Association.
Nice.
As long as this land was used for the benefit of the youth of Lakeside. So that's what we do.
Marvelous. So, yeah, you benefit a lot of the youth of Lakeside. Tell us some of the organizations.
We do.
The rodeo helps.
Well, the El Capitan High School, of course, Lakeside Union School District. We do the National and Little Leagues. We do the Pop Warner Football. We've helped build the Boys and Girls Club. Almost all the school extracurricular events come to us for funding.
That's great.
And Boy Scouts.
The 4-H Club, I think, right?
We do 4-H. We do FFA. We actually lease part of the grounds behind us for the Eastern San Diego County Junior Fair, which is in May.
Nice.
And so that's part of what we do.
Now, the big rodeo here, the Lakeside Rodeo, is held every year in late April. This year, the rodeo is going to be April 25th, 26th, and 27th. And as always in recent years, it's part of a bigger festival called Western Days. Tell us about that.
Well, Western Days is formulated around the rodeo, of course. And the weekend before, they start with little events throughout the town. Chamber does little things, and we go on, and the Lakeside Optimist has a barbecue on Thursday before the event. There's a whole bunch of little things that go on throughout the week so that everything is centered around Western Days. It is all...
Yeah, chuck wagon dinners and all kinds of things, it looks like.
Yeah.
Pancake breakfast. And then, of course, the big thing is the Lakeside Parade, right?
Well, the Lakeside Parade is on Saturday morning prior to our Saturday afternoon matinee performance. So there's a parade. I believe it steps off at 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning, and it goes until about 10 in the morning, and then everybody goes and has a little something to eat, and then they come to the rodeo.
And it runs all weekend, and then on Sunday you even have cowboy music and poetry. And
the chamber has a little cowboy deal over at the park, and then we have cowboy church on Sunday morning here at the grounds for the cowboys and the rest of us who are around here to do that.
Now, what are the rodeo events that people can expect to see if they come here?
Well, of course, there's bull riding, team roping.
How long is considered a long time to ride that bull?
Well, 8 seconds is the time that you want to stay on the bull in order to be able to collect any money. And that's the working time of that animal. So that animal gets to work 8 seconds, and then he goes back to his pen and relaxes.
So there, he's got a pretty good life.
He's got a real good life, yeah.
What are the other events?
There's bareback riding, there's saddle bronc riding, there's tie-down calf roping. There's team roping, which is two gentlemen trying to rope a steer. There's still wrestling, and then, of course, there's bull riding. And then we have the ladies' event, which is barrel racing.
Yeah. Now, one thinks of rodeo as being sort of the ultimate macho, manly sport, but it sounds like it's changed through the years.
Well, everything evolves. So the big events like bull riding and the saddle bronc riding and all the rough stocks is predominantly men-based. There are a few women who join in the team roping, and then, of course, there's the barrel racing, which is almost all women. There are, once in a while you get a man, but it's almost all women.
And this rodeo is officially part of the Professional Rodeo Cowboy Association, the PRCA, correct?
Yes, that is
correct.
Sanctioned
event. I understand that at a national level, the sport has changed. As you noted, it began with cowhands, ranch hands, and now I understand at the national level, more than half of the competitors in these professional rodeos have never worked at a cattle ranch. Is that the case here?
That is pretty correct. A lot of these gentlemen, that's all they do is rodeo, and they make a lot of money doing it. You have to remember that if you go to bigger rodeos, there's a lot of money involved.
What are the prizes? If somebody wins the top prize here, what do they get?
Here it's in the $7,000 to $8,000 range. If you are lucky enough and you get the points and you've made enough money throughout the year and you go to NFR, which is in Las Vegas, in December, it's millions of dollars. So they're talking big money.
A
lot of these cowboys are millionaires just because this is what they've done. They've also done some advertising promotions, and they get paid just like every other athlete.
Sports celebrity, yeah. Wow, how interesting. Now, Betty, I understand there's one more event that's rather unusual that's kind of a specialty that's evolved here. Tell us about that.
We do have another event. We include the kids in our rodeo because that's who we are, that's what we do. So we have a stick horse race for children from 3 to 6 years old.
Cute.
They sign up when they come in the front gate, and then somewhere around the middle of the performance, they're called out, and they come down to the arena. They're issued a horse, a stick horse, of course, but they're issued their horse, and then they're lined up, and then they get to race to the other end of the arena and
back.
And to be honest, every child gets a prize.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. There's been concerns raised at some rodeos, as with circuses and so forth, about humane treatment of the animals. What do you do at your rodeo to protect the animals and to assure that they're treated as humanely as possible?
We're very fortunate. To start with, the PRC is very strict about the animal rights and animal care. Our stock contractor has invested hundreds of thousands of dollars into these animals, so he doesn't want them hurt or injured in any way. Also, we're very fortunate that we use the Junior Fair grounds with the covered building over there, and that we house the majority of the animals undercover so that they're out of the elements. We make sure that they are treated well. If there is an injury, we have vets here on staff all the time to make sure that they're taken care of immediately.
Good.
And we do that for the cowboys also in case they get hurt.
Yeah, there you go.
So
the rodeo clowns, I guess the guys have to run out and distract that bull or bucking.
Well, Mr. Higley is pretty quick, so he's okay. But yeah, we make sure that our animals that are used here are strictly taken care of by the PRCA rules. And of course, Mr. Growney and Mr. Kish, who are the owners of the animals, they are very strict about what's taken, how they're taken care of, and what's done with them.
Yeah, I imagine it takes special breeding to raise some of these champion animals, the bull riding and
it does.
Bucking broncos and so forth.
It does. Mr. Growney and Mr. Kish have a couple of different ranches where they specialize in breeding and raising the bronc horses along with the bulls. And some of their bulls have been nationally known and are very, very, very well known throughout the community of rodeo. They've had one bull that's never been ridden. So he's a very, very expensive bull because if you don't ride him, you don't get money. And they do. So that's kind of the deal. And mostly, the goal of these animals are to go to NFR just like with the cowboys. Mm-hmm. So the better they perform throughout the year, the harder they are to ride, the better chance they are to go to NFR.
Interesting. Well, there you go. Now, you also crown a rodeo queen each year, I understand.
We do. We just had our pageant last month, and our new rodeo queens are Rachel Sarno Owens, and then our junior queen is Amanda Hopp, and they promote our rodeo. That's what their jobs are. They go out and do the promotion. They mm-hmm. do the personal appearances. They go throughout the week of Western days. They go to all the schools. Mm-hmm. They're promoting with the kids. They're playing with the kids. And then during the rodeo, they are in the arena. They are helping move cattle. And then they also are out there to be with the kids. They sign autographs. They're the beauty part of the rodeo.
Mm-hmm. And Lakeside, of course, has a very rich history of cowboys and ranching. It dates all the way back to the Spanish land grants. And, of course, before that, the Native Americans that were here on this land and the horses. So this is a proud Lakeside tradition.
It is. Rodeo actually started in Lakeside in the early 1900s. There were some years that we didn't have rodeo. Mm-hmm. And then in the 30s and 40s, it became prominent again. And it's been on and off and on and off. Now, this association has promoted this rodeo and done this rodeo for the last 50 years.
So are you planning some special activities this year since it is the 50th anniversary of the rodeo?
We do have a specialty act coming in that's a little bit of a surprise for everyone. And
can you give us any hints or tell us what it's about?
Let's just say he's very colorful. He does some really neat things with a rope. I think everybody will really enjoy his act. He's very special to us, and he's very special to the rodeo community.
Well, there you go. I'm certainly looking forward to finding out more about that. Next, I'm going to introduce Mary Clark. And Mary, I understand that you're in charge of ticketing for the event. Can you tell our listeners where they can get tickets for this if they're interested in coming to the Lakeside Rodeo?
I'd be happy to. We have tickets available at Boot Barn in Kearney Mesa, Boot Barn in El Cajon. Currently, we're selling them online through our website, lakesiderodeo.com. There's a phone number you can call. The phone number is area code 619-561-4331.
And I see here also that there's going to be some specialty acts this year, too. It looks like you're going to have the Winchester Widows, the Victorian Roses Riding Society, Grand Ladies of the Old West, and the Hole in the Wall Gang. So some Western reenactors, and looks like a whole lot of fun for the whole family planned.
Oh, yes. It's always fun for the families. We have four performances, two in the evening at 7:30, one on Friday evening, and one on Saturday. Saturday afternoon at 2, we have a matinee performance, and again on Sunday, we have a matinee performance at 2 o'clock.
Very good. And again, this all benefits the nonprofit El Capitan Stadium Association, benefiting the youth groups in Lakeside.
Yes, it does.
I want to thank you for joining us today on East County Magazine show on KNSJ.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. This week's Destination East County program includes several annual outdoor festivals, a parade, garden and home tours, plant sales, wine, ranch, and dancing events, and more. The 49th annual Lakeside Western Days parade theme for this year is Lakeside, where the West is still alive. and celebrates the Lakeside Rodeo's 50th anniversary. The event will take place on Saturday, April 26th at 9:35 a.m. along Woodside and Main Avenue. This year's parade grand marshal is the El Capitan Stadium Association for 50 years of organizing the Lakeside Rodeo. The parade will be filled with a wide variety of antique and classic cars, bands and entertainment from local schools, floats representing local businesses and organizations, clowns, and of course, cowboys and cowgirls. To get ready for the parade the night before on Friday, April 25th, the Optimist Club of Lakeside will be offering its 33rd annual Western Days Barbecue Dinner, served at the Lakeside Rodeo Grounds from 5:30 to 8 p.m. The menu is deep pit barbecued beef with all the fixins. The annual Lakeside Rodeo will take place the same weekend as the Lakeside Parade and Western Days celebration. Performances are scheduled throughout Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, April 25th, 26th, and 27th at the Lakeside Rodeo Grounds. Spectators can enjoy Western-style fun with bronc riding, barrel racing, steer wrestling, roping competitions, and more. The Horse of the Sun Ranch on Old Highway 80 in Pine Valley is holding its open house event on Saturday, April 26th from noon to 4 p.m. The open house includes free program demonstrations throughout the afternoon, free ranch tours and nature walks, and catering by Descanso Junction Catering. In honor of Arbor Day on Saturday, April 26th at 10 a.m., guests can join Park Ranger Brett Exner to take a hike through Santa Isabel East Preserve. The group will be observing the various species of trees in the preserve, including oaks, sycamores, and pines. This is a family-friendly event with all ages and abilities welcome. Hikers can meet at the Santa Isabel East Staging Area on Farmer Road in Julian. Inclement weather will cancel this event. The German-American societies in El Cajon are celebrating the heritage of their home countries at their second annual International Heritage Ball on Saturday, April 26th from 6 p.m. to 10:30 p.m. The Heritage Ball includes the USA, Poland, Germany, and other European countries. Dinner and dessert will be served from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m., and then the German Kindertanzgruppe of the Society's Little Dancers will open the Heritage Ball at 7:30 p.m., followed by other entertainers performing their folk dances. The Lemon Grove Historical Society presents a day at the historic 1892 Troxell Manor and Gardens, Lemon Grove's third oldest home, which was built by William and Mary Ann Troxell. The tour takes place on Saturday, April 26th, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., when visitors can tour the manor and its garden, with ancient trees, a working organic garden, and orchard. Also available will be demonstrations and live music under the trees with guitarist John Garner. Guests can also observe artists at work and enjoy refreshments and tastings. The 6th Annual Coyote Music Festival will be hosted by Cuyamaca Community College on the campus Grand Lawn on Saturday, April 26th from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. The festival features 7 bands of up-and-coming local talent that will showcase all original music compositions. These homegrown singer-songwriters will perform in a variety of genres, including acoustic, rock, folk, and pop. The event is free and open to the public, with free parking. A springtime English-style high tea amidst blooming fields of lavender will be served up at the Keys Creek Lavender Farm in Valley Center. The high teas will be served at 2 p.m. on Friday and Saturday, April 25th and 26th. The 19th Annual East County Garden Tour, put on by the Friends of East County Arts, Inc., takes place on Saturday, April 26th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., all 6 gardens offer a variety of settings to learn from and enjoy. Included in the tour this year are water-wise settings, unique garden corners, an African-themed explosion of colorful characters and drought-tolerant plants, St. Madeline Sophie's 2-acre organic garden and nursery, which sells many wonderful plants, and apple crate vendors offering crafts and garden creations for purchase. The Wine and Rail event embarks on Saturday, April 26th, at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum in Campo and the Campo Depot, where riders can enjoy an afternoon of leisure in the beautiful backcountry riding the historic Pacific Southwest rails. Altogether, there will be live presentations by local wineries, heavy hors d'oeuvres, presentations by historians and wineries, as well as a scenic train ride, all put on by the Mountain Empire Campo Kiwanis and East County Vintners Association. A self-guided tour of the museum is also included. Now for a preview of some upcoming events, all in East County. The Wings of Freedom aircraft tour at the Ramona Airport will be holding its last day for tours and flying on Friday, April 25th from 9 a.m. to noon. The exhibit opened on Wednesday, April 23rd. Aviation enthusiasts and war history buffs can enjoy a unique display at Ramona Airport of World War II aircraft, including the B-17 Flying Fortress, B-24 Liberator, and P-51 Mustang. There are walkthrough tours as well as actual flights in a few of the vintage aircraft, including a B-17 bomber. The Ramona Bluegrass and Old West Fest is coming up on Saturday, May 3rd and Sunday, May 4th. This two-day local East County Festival has a lineup of musicians performing on the Old West stage, a Civil War era camp, a saloon, mountain men, a prairie schooner, and the cowboys. You'll be able to visit their camps, talk and learn about how life was lived in the 1700s to 1800s, and enjoy two full days of bluegrass and old-fashioned cowboy music, along with jam sessions and workshops for children. Cajon Classic Cruises returns every Wednesday. The car show will be held every Wednesday night and continues through October 29th in the area of the Prescott Promenade in downtown El Cajon. Old West gunfights, ranch branding, mutton busting, and a horseshoe tournament will take place at the Campo Lake Marina Roundup on Saturday, May 3rd, presented at the Camp Lockett Event and Equestrian Facility. Other activities include the Miss Roundup pageant, kids games, country music, an antique tractor display, a reenactment of the famous Campo gunfight at high noon, merchandise and food vendors, a stick horse competition, and gymkhana all day. Gates open at 7 a.m. with opening ceremonies at 10 a.m. The annual Spring Garden Festival will be celebrated at Cuyamaca College on Saturday, May 3rd from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. This free family-friendly community festival will feature demonstrations on community farming topics, Cuyamaca College's nursery's biggest plant sale of the year, the Rancho San Diego Farmers Market, a fashion show called Fashion in Bloom, and much, much more. This is the 21st year of the festival, and the demonstrations aim to help one become a better gardener and learn how to conserve our precious resources. The 17th annual Sage and Songbirds Festival and Garden Tour will be held in Alpine. Two separate events, the Garden Tour will be held throughout the weekend on May 3rd through Sunday, May 4th. The Garden Tour includes five private home gardens, a public habitat garden with a plant sale, and a tour of the Sky Hunters Birds of Prey Rehabilitation Facility. Then the festival takes place one day only on Saturday, May 3rd from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., at the Alpine Creek Town Center on Tavern Road in Alpine, where free admission gives you a butterfly release, birds of prey and hummingbirds, snakes, lizards, spiders, educational seminars, and arts and craft vendors. Sir Optimus International of Lemon Grove presents their Spring Craft Fair on Saturday, May 3rd, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Lemon Grove Academy Auditorium Middle School in Lemon Grove. The fair features plenty of original and handmade gifts. For a wine experience in the country, the 24th annual Vintage Alpine is taking place on Sunday, May 4th from 1 to 4 p.m. at Summers Past Farms on Old Highway 80 in Alpine. Next year marks the century milestone of the founding of Acumba Hot Springs. Four major festivals are planned for the centennial, including the third annual Blues Festival on Saturday, May 3rd from 12 noon until 6:30 p.m. At Highland Center on Old Highway 80 in Acumba Hot Springs, guests are invited to attend the event, celebrate, and enjoy Acumba's scenic backcountry location with their lawn chair and an appetite for homemade food, crafts, and a lineup of music with a variety of talented musicians. There will be pulled pork sandwiches, hot dogs, and refreshments for sale at the center, and the Acumba Women's Club will be selling baked goods. That's all for this week. All of these events and more can be found on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at www.eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is supported by our listeners and with the Community Enhancement Grant from San Diego County. See you around, East County.
The deadline for paying your federal income taxes on April 15th is now passed. But do you know where your tax dollars are going? You might be surprised to find out just what the federal government is prioritizing and what it's not. Nearly half of the federal government's revenues come from income taxes. According to the National Priorities Project, the average American paid over $11,000 in federal income taxes last year. Over a quarter of that, 27%, went to fund the military. Healthcare programs, including Medicaid and the Children's Health Insurance Program, got almost 23% of your tax dollars. 14% went to pay interest on the national debt. Unemployment benefits and labor accounted for about 10 cents on every tax dollar that you paid. Veterans benefits account for 5%, as does food and agriculture. Running the government itself takes 4.5 cents of every tax dollar that you pay. Housing and community expenditures take 4 cents. Only about 2% of your taxes goes for the education of our nation's children. Energy and the environment takes just under 2% of taxes. Transportation, science, and international affairs each got between a penny and 2 pennies out of every tax dollar that you pay. Now, these figures do not include Medicare or Social Security, which we pay for through sources other than income taxes, such as payroll taxes. As we stated before, income taxes provide nearly half of all revenues for the federal government. If we add in revenues from these other sources, where does all of that money in the federal budget go? Overall, about a third of it is used to fund Social Security, unemployment, and labor. Medicare and health consume nearly 27% of the budget. The military gets almost 17%, and about 6% of the total budget goes to pay interest on the national debt, while 4% funds veterans' benefits. About 3% is for agriculture and food programs. Education, housing, and transportation take about 2% each. Energy and the environment, science, and foreign aid each account for 1% or less of the federal budget. Oh, and the smallest category of all? For all the talk of a bloated federal bureaucracy that we hear about, the government itself takes less than 0.1%, or about 0.0001 of the total federal budget. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.